All right. Appreciate the thoughts, David. All right, let's jump into, and like I said, Josh, I'll bring you in here in just a second. But so we are at the 24, and I've got it started a little bit earlier because I want to get context. It's always good to get context of a conversation. If you haven't seen this conversation, I've went ahead and posted it in the description. And so please check out the entirety of this conversation. I've also got the show that we've been talking about, the discussion with Chris Date and Tim Stratton, in the description. So please make sure you check those out even before you listen to this. And let's just jump into the conversation, shall we? Let me full screen it and then we will begin.
Jason's responsiveness. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the objective part. The objective part says that you need to be, in order to be control of your actions, you need to have moderate reasons responsiveness. What that means is three things. You need to be strongly receptive to reasons coming into your mind. So you are aware of reasons to do this, that. Not that you have access to those things to exercise that. That would be indeterminism. But just that you're aware of things, aware of reasons for why you do what you do.
Okay, I'm going to stop right here. Colton says, in order to be in control of your actions, you need to have moderate reasons responsiveness. What that means is you need to be strongly receptive to reasons coming into your mind so you are aware of reasons to do this or that. Not that you have access to those reasons. I want to highlight that because we're going to bring that up here in just a second. But not that you have access to those things to exercise that. That would be indeterminism. But just that you are aware of reasons for why you do what you do. And my immediate thoughts on this, and then we'll get Tim and we'll get Dale and we'll get Josh's and David's responses to this as well. But my initial response is I think what Colton says here is spot on. And why indeterminists use language like passive cogs and experiential will, like Joshua has purported. Not only that, but people are not always aware of reasons for why they do what they do. So from a theological determinist perspective, all that one is aware of is what God has determined that they would be aware of. No more, no less. In other words, people only experience what God determines outside of space-time that they would indeed experience. And that's just my initial thoughts on this entire thing. Tim, what do you think?
Well, with all due respect, Colton completely misses the point of the argument that J.P. Moreland and I have advanced in the literature. This is also why I have to continually, and J.P. agrees here, and Dr. Craig does as well. He uses universal instead of exhaustive. But this is why J.P. and I say, look, we've got to continue to use the E of Ed, that exhaustive divine determinism, and shine a big, bright spotlight on the exhaustive nature of, I mean, if you, it seems like they try to steal from libertarian freedom to argue against libertarian freedom. And that's why I say, no, this is exhaustive divine determinism. I'm not going to let you do that. So after all, I mean, if God determines all things about humanity, which is the view that Tyler and Colton affirm, at least they did, Tyler did back then. I don't know what Tyler Vella's position on that is now, since he's committed apostasy since doing this interview with you guys and has rejected Jesus. And I just got to say, man, nobody is cheering this. No, you know, of course Calvinists aren't, but no Molinist is. No, that just, I mean, I was reading Tyler's Facebook post to my wife. We were on the road and I needed a break. She was driving and I started reading to her from my phone what Tyler had written. And she'll tell you, I just lost it. I just started bawling. Yeah. And I reached out to Tyler. I told him that I loved him. Anyway, it's weird just even seeing Tyler on the screen here now and thinking, wow, he was affirming Christ at that point. And now he's saying that Jesus is not the second person of the Trinity, that he was a lunatic, not in a Looney Tunes way, but just really incorrect. What's really odd to me is that he still seems to want to hang on to some form of Reformed determinism theology. And what hurts me is to see somebody let go of Jesus before they would let go of that. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. We're not here to talk about that right now. I just, gosh, Tyler, I love you. And I encourage you, come back. Yeah. You don't have to get rid of Jesus. He loves you. Same way I told DePine Creek, he loves you, Tyler, more than you can possibly imagine. But anyway, let's get back to Colton anyway. If God determines all things about humanity, then as I've made clear in my book and journal articles and YouTube videos and website articles, God determines what one is aware of and, more importantly, how one thinks about it. So thus, on Ed, God determines the level of strength in which one is aware of reasons. And more importantly, God determines how one reasons about things, right? Even how Tyler Vella reasoned through this, right? God determined that if determinism is true. Now, just because one experiences these passive, subjective sensations of reasons, it does not mean that one reasons correctly. I mean, that's the whole point of the free thinking argument. After all, people reason poorly and think they've reasoned correctly all the time, right? So merely stating that one is aware of reasons does absolutely nothing to escape the trap laid by the free thinking arguments. And moreover, as I've explained elsewhere, and I think I've even said this to Colton himself, imagine the absurdity of being offered a theological proposition to judge and evaluate. And then you're aware of at least 10 evaluative judgment options, what I call EJOs, E-J-Os, right? These evaluative judgment options. So you're aware that you can judge the statement as good, bad, better, the best, worse, the worst, true, false, probably true, and probably false. There's your 10. Now, suppose that it subjectively seems to you like you have access to all 10 EJOs, but you then affirm that in reality, a deity of deception gives you actual access to only one of them by necessitating exactly how you, and the scare quotes are used intentionally, how you judge and evaluate the theological proposition. Now, let's suppose the proposition has a truth value of false, but the deity of deception determines you to judge it as probably true. Now, if that's the case, the deity of deception deterministically prevented 9 of the 10 EJOs from your actual access. He also determined you to experience an illusion of having access to all 10 EJOs, but that was also a lie. So bottom line, it's hard to make sense of a being who is deterministically prevented from accessing the truth, but also determined to experience an illusion that they have access to the truth as a rational agent. I don't think we could call that being a rational agent. But be that as it may, that's the view in which Colton contends here. I mean, that's what is entailed by his position of exhaustive divine determinism. And JP and I, JP Moreland and I, make this clear in our paper. That is not the kind of rationality worth wanting. So what do you guys think?
Dale, I'll turn it over to you. I've been doing a lot of talking tonight, but go ahead.
So I first of all, I was trying to write down, because he said there's three conditions, and I think we just got to the first one, the strong.
We did.
Yep. Okay, so I'm not totally sure what he means by strongly receptive to reason. So yeah, obviously reasons come in, but what reading kind of your thing, this is where I think that analogy comes in, and the role of that blue domino, right? So he's trying to say, well, look, the blue domino is just aware of the causal chain, including certain green dominoes, which include reasons, right? So he's saying reasons have to be a part of this causal chain kind of thing. But the blue domino, it is, you have the quote here, a passive cog, because the agent itself doesn't have access to utilize these reasons as influences, right, or something, right?
So right.
Whereas libertarian, no, the blue domino accesses the reasons and then makes that choice to do or not to do, or to do or to refrain from doing. So that's what I meant, where the blue domino, it's kind of like floating outside the causal chain, and just, I'm aware that there's these green dominoes, but
yeah, it's outside the causal chain and it starts a new causal chain because, you know, the domino is a person.
And I'm just curious, what good does it, and Dell, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'll give it back to you right after this. What good does it for us to have access, or not to have access, but to merely be aware of these things? Like, what does that do exactly in the causal chain? Nothing, according to the determinist view, right?
Well, they think that it affords the ability to say that the agent having that experience means the agent is then responsible for those reasons and for that experience.
Yeah, it's finding a way to put responsibility, or take responsibility from God and put it on the person. Right. I get it. Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's the way I see it. Yeah, because they think those green dominoes are enough. And I'm sorry, I'll shut up about dominoes. I'm talking about them too much. they want to, like, look, in order to be free, you need the choice to be made or caused by certain key internal states. So it's, I'm not being externally determined, that kind of thing. Look, I've got reasons. I've got my beliefs. I've got my desires. And this is why I did that. Yeah, but those beliefs and everything like that are externally determined themselves. And that's right. Where Tim's free thinking argument comes in. So, yeah.
Right. And what are they determined by? God. It's not what they're determined by, really. It's who they're determined by. God's decree. And I tried to bring this out in the episode with Colton and Tyler. It's like, look, by proxy, isn't God's decree the active force, or if you want to call it that, the force or the cause that brings these things about? And they denied it, right? And I don't get it. Like, I see that's exactly what is determining, or what is causing these things to come to be. Because if the decree, like, and this is what I tried to bring out during the episode, and I'll shut up, but if the decree, which it has to, because it's a direct result of the things that happen in space-time, right? If the decree transcends space-time, then because of the decree, and then by proxy God, because he decreed, right? He determined, then that is what brings these things about. Therefore, our actions, our thoughts, our justifications, our deliberations are only, as Tim says too, causes, right, of the divine decree that was determined and necessitated by God. That's it.
So, and I'm glad you said that. And we should define what we mean by determinism. Determinism is the view that antecedent conditions are sufficient to necessitate all events. An event is determined if antecedent conditions were sufficient to necessitate said event. Now, on Calvinistic determinism, God provides the antecedent conditions which are sufficient to necessitate exactly how everybody thinks and exactly how everybody will ultimately believe. So on this view, on the view that Tyler Vella was arguing for in this video, God provided the antecedent conditions which were sufficient to necessitate his apostasy several days later.
Yep.
And Colton doesn't know if God's going to do that to him either. There's no assurance of anything on that view.
Because it could very well just as happen to Colton as it could to Tyler.
Right.
Could very well.
Yeah, I'm sure Tyler would say that he had assurance of salvation not long ago.
If he affirmed Calvinism, he had to affirm P, right? Perseverance of the saints.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, I agree. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, let's jump into the next one. We got a lot of things to go through, and so the next timestamp, I will go ahead and play it at the 25-minute and 44-second mark. So let's do it.
My dispositional environment, all these things, it kind of funnels down to one, and that's the weakness of it. And so then I actually interact with that one reason to do that one thing.
All right, I'm going to stop you right here, Colton. No, you don't. What makes you you is merely aware of and functioning in the way which God has determined you to. This is libertarian language that, in my humble opinion, the determinist has to borrow from to make their view even coherent. You heard what he said. I interact with one reason to do one thing. No, Colton, you just said a moment ago that you are only aware and that you don't have access to these things. So how in the world can you interact with them?
Yeah, great catch, Tyler. You know, I think it's vital as we move forward in these discussions and in these debates for libertarians to constantly call out the inappropriate use of language that's ultimately being stolen by determinists. You know, thankfully, Chris Date realizes this, and he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to use that permissive language. That's not consistent with our view. But Colton will do it here. And indeed, the vast majority of determinists will steal. They steal from libertarian language in order to make their atrocious and hideous view sound more palpable. Is that the word? to those who don't see the bigger picture, right? It's really, I'll tell you, it's really kind of deceptive, although not intentionally, I don't think. You know, even J.P. Moreland and I wrote the following in our paper. I've been saying it a lot. So we say, though unintentional, by utilizing statements in the active voice, not a direct quote, by utilizing statements in the active voice and expressing their views, determinists benefit from a rhetorical mirage that keeps hidden what is actually being asserted. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they benefit from a rhetorical mirage that keeps hidden what is actually being asserted. So as much as Colton and would stomp his foot, and Tyler did too here, and make claims to the contrary, by definition, if exhaustive divine determinism is true, then God provides the antecedent conditions which are sufficient to necessitate all things about Colton Carlson and Tyler Vella. And that includes exactly what they think of and about, exactly how they think of and about it, and ultimately exactly what theological beliefs they affirm and which ones they reject. And this includes all of their false theological beliefs.
Right.
And this, again, let me say it again. This should be striking for determinists, given the thoughts and beliefs Tyler Vella espoused just a few days after doing his interview on this very channel. Now, let me make a point about this deception that I mentioned. Not just that God is a deity of deception, but if determinists continue to steal from libertarian language, JP and I noted that that the determinist often unintentionally incorrectly uses libertarian language. So it's unintentional. They get a pass. However, sure, the more that libertarians point this out, if determinists continue to benefit from this rhetorical mirage, then we will be able to call them out on much worse, being intentionally deceptive. So again, let me sing the praises of Chris Date. He tries not to do this, and I encourage more determinists to follow his lead.
I agree. Dale?
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of the similar point that I said last time. So I think you hit the nail on the head. There at the very least appears, and I believe that there is a contradiction here, right? When you're saying, well, look, I have no access to it. And then all of a sudden I, quote unquote, interact. That for that, well, that's access. Like, you know, the reasons provide influences, and then we interact with that and make a choice. But Yeah, again, I don't have enough information because I don't know. I think Martin Fisher is the scholar.
John Martin Fisher.
So, like, what does he mean by interact? Is this truly a contradiction, or does he have some kind of ad hoc definition of interact? I don't know, like, what that means. So, yeah, it appears like a contradiction, though.
Well, yeah, let me just add that, you know, J.P. Moreland and I were clear about exposing this in our paper. And, you know, on the libertarian has access to saying, I interact with these reasons. But the determinists, they really need to be saying things like this. Sensations of interactings passed through me and necessitated certain thoughts, beliefs, and actions and body movements. Right? None of this is up to them. Right? It was up to things that existed before they even had their first day of existence. And so it's a passiveness. This is a passing through versus the libertarian having active power. Are you driving the ship of reason, or are you tied up in the back seat along for the ride, merely aware of what's going on with no ability to change the course of your thinking on this topic? So that's the difference.
Yeah.
And I would like to see and hear a response from the determinist side about how exactly you are interacting with these things. Are you the one that's determining it? Because like I said in my intro, it doesn't seem like God can be the determining factor in your deliberations, in your actions. And at the same exact time, you are the determining factor. Like I said, it sounds like one is having their cake and eating it too in that scenario, if they affirm those things. And so I would just like to hear a Calvinist or determinist explain to me, what do you mean exactly when you say these types of things I have access to? And we're going to see Colton do this again and again and again. And no disrespect, Colton. I love Colton to death. Don't get me wrong. Like, no disrespect to Colton or Tyler or any determinist. But let's be consistent here. Let's be consistent. And so that brings me to my next timestamp at the 26:22 mark.
Action. And then the third condition of moderate reason responsiveness is that it needs to be, that reason for doing that thing needs to be in an understandable pattern grounded in reality. What that means is I'm not just making a whim decision. I'm not just making an insane decision. It's based on my character, the causal historical chain of who I am, my dispositions at that time. It's not grounded in anything else other than the reasons that were given to me and how I usually, in an understandable way, in reality, interact with those reasons. So,
no. Colton, okay. This language, again, seems very close, if not one for one, with that which libertarians would use. It also seems like this participation in reasoning and acting in a reasonable way contradicts Colton's old words at the 24:35 timestamp. If you don't have access to those reasons but are only aware of them, how can one interact with those reasons exactly? Just like what Dale said a few moments ago, this would imply that you have access to those reasons, to that reasons responsive mechanism, to that guidance control that both Colton and Chris argued for that we have some control over. This would imply that you have access to that and that you are not simply aware. So is this a contradiction? It kind of seems that way, but I digress.
Yeah, I just like to say that, you know, let me reiterate that, you know, we need to notice Colton's inappropriate use of active libertarian language. He says, I'm not just making a whim or insane decision. It's based on my character. But really, to state this accurately, Colton should simply say, I'm not making a decision. Something or someone else did that for me. It's ultimately based on God's character. You know, that is to say that God's decision passes through Colton and causes movements in Colton's body. But there's, and you know, firings in his brain and whatnot.
Right.
So there's so much more, though, that goes into the process of rationality than one's determined character. That's not even up to Colton, right? Colton's character is not up to him on his view. Now, I know, let's talk about character. I know some Calvinists who have horrible character, who they're really bad moral character. You know, I see no, or at best very little fruit of the Spirit in their lives. They're mean, they're bullies, right? But
Sonny Hernandez.
Who?
I didn't say nothing.
I'm not saying any names, but I'll just say these
heretic.
These mean Calvinists who have really bad character agree with Colton.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I also know other Calvinists that are awesome. Eli Ayala, just a great guy. He seems to have really,
yeah,
really good moral character. But guess what? He also agrees with Colton. So there's obviously more to epistemic decision making than mere character. Indeed, really bad people can rationally infer truth, and really good people can make really stupid decisions and ultimately choose to believe some absurd things. But JP and I argue that we are the kind of thing that can make, that is free to think at a certain moment. And it's not a conditional analysis. So something doesn't have to be different about me and my past to infer the truth. I have the ability to weigh and evaluate options now and infer the truth, even if I have horrible character. But anyway, I digress. What do you think?
I'm on the same level, man. Dude, I hear you. Tyler, you picked these out like perfectly, and the responses that you guys are giving, I mean, what else can I add? I mean, it's truth. I mean, Dale?
I have an interesting question for Tim, and it kind of relates, so it's semi-related about this issue of whimsical actions or choices and stuff like that. And so with sometimes some libertarian free will proponents will say, look, it's possible for free will agents, even God, perhaps Jesus during his time of humiliation, to not have to have reasons play a role. They do trivial actions, twiddling their thumbs or something. They choose to twiddle their thumbs or something like that. And that doesn't require like reasons to play a role. So I was just wondering, like, what's your take on some people who say, look, we can make free will choices that are trivial and don't employ or need reasons to play a role? Mm.
It seems to me that those would be indeterministic but random events if they're not based on reason or the ability to reason. So, yeah, again, JP and I discussed this in our paper. At the end, we discussed ultimately our beliefs are determined by nature and thus untrustworthy, or they're determined by a deity of deception and thus untrustworthy, or they're random and thus untrustworthy, or they're determined by an intelligently designed free-thinking agent created in the image and likeness of God, with the purpose of being able to infer better and true beliefs.
I think we're going to have like the total of this paper by the end of the episode. I've been hearing about this paper since the Chris, you and Chris Date went at it.
Yeah. You haven't read it yet?
No, I haven't.
Repent.
Repent.
I am.
Really change your mind, sir, and read that paper.
I am.
It's good.
I am.
It's good. All right. Right on, guys. Man, I've got so many responses. Like I
know.
And so I agree, Tim, ultimately. Just like I said, you know, this was one of the things that I said in my intro, that this was one of the inconsistencies that I keep seeing is, and that's the big guys, I'm going to tell you this right now. This is one of the biggest things that turned me off to theological determinism, because again, one of two things: if God permits, what exactly is he permitting, if not his own decree, if the theological determinist is true? There is no sense of permitting. And I give all the kudos in the world to Chris Date. I agree with him on this, that you, as a theological determinist, should not use the word permit. God has determined these things to happen in a certain sequential sense. And what I mean by that is that in order, just like the dominoes fall, boop, 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 there is no like R.C. Sproul says, there is no rogue molecule that is free to do to come in and mess up the whole spiel. Everything is under God's control and determined by God at that. Secondly, like I said, what makes us us, if we want to be a physicalist, then I don't know what that would entail because I'm not a physicalist. But if we're a dualist, what I mean by that is our soul, the thing that is created in the image of God. Now, I know we can talk about ontology whenever it comes to that. We can talk about functionality whenever it comes to that. Whatever. I'm talking about the soul, the thing that's created in the image of God, that which makes me different than Dr. Stratton, me different than Josh Davidson, me different than Del Glover. You get what I'm trying to say? That thing does not do anything. We are a passive cog in that scenario, which is why I said a while ago, that's why indeterminists use this kind of language, because we are, and I love Josh's example whenever it comes to this. He talks about an experiential will. We are merely experiencing the things that God has determined beforehand. And so with that, I digress and we move on to the next clip. And this is the last clip, as a matter of fact, and I've got kind of a long response to this, but we'll jump into it. So this is at the 28:58 mark, and let me pull it up. Right, we'll start at 53 if I can get to it. There we go.
Capitalism on the market today.
Okay, fair enough. So thank you for that.
Question for clarity there, because I heard you say basically that we view ourselves as the source of our decisions,
right?
So is this not the claim that we are in fact the source of the decision, but that right. We have the experience of being the source of the decision, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. Okay. So of course Fish and Ruiz are going to deny ultimate sourcehood. That's the kind of sourcehood that the libertarian has in mind, because they're compatibilists, and if they hold to that kind of sourcehood is incompatible with determinism, so they can't have that. And they're like, who cares? They use Fisher reviews, or they use Frank Verstall arguments, Frank Verstall examples to show us that we don't need to be the ultimate source of our actions, nor even the sufficient source of our actions. We just need to be a source. Like Jones in the Frank Verstall example sees himself as a source. So yeah, you hit it right on the money. All we have to do is see ourselves as a source, not the source. And that's okay. Enough to own our mechanism.
Yeah. So, all right. So I'm honestly not sure how viewing oneself as a source gets the compatibilists off the hook here. For one, since we're talking about actions, how can there be multiple sources? Source, by definition, according to Merriam-Webster, is a generative force or a cause or one that initiates, like an author. I understand that the Westminster Confession has secondary causation language, but if this is true, the only sense in which we are agents in this world is in the sense of instruments through which God accomplishes his purposes. I'm fine with that kind of language if we are talking about Christians or God using people for judgmental purposes. For a problem arises when we start talking about the unregenerate's role and their acts of sin. Does God use sin to accomplish his purposes? I think Isaiah 10 is an example of this very fact. But the question isn't about judgmental means by which God disciplines his children. If that were the case, every rape, molestation, abortion, or something else bad that happened would be an act of judgment or discipline. I don't think any of us are willing to say abortions, for example, are a means by which corrective intent is being brought about by God in that instance. But to go back to the sourcehood language for just a second, if the compatibilist is fine using the term ultimate source for God in regards to all things that come to be, then at the same time, they should have no problem saying that God is also the cause by which everything, good and evil, is brought about. To be caused to do something does not only imply force or coercion in some instances it truly does, but cause is defined as, quote, the one, such as a person, event, or condition that is responsible for an action or result. Therefore, if the Calvinist is right and God determines all things that come to be in space-time to actually come to be in space-time, then everything that comes to be is a direct result of God's determination, thereby defining God's determination and by proxy God as the direct cause of those things, good and evil.
Hmm. Yeah.
I digress. The defense rests.
Well said. Well said. I just want to, you know, as a Molinist, I affirm that the divine decree entails all that will happen, right? The difference, again, is that the Calvinist typically assumes that the decree is deterministic and that the decree necessitates all that will happen. And thus there can be no libertarian freedom, not even to think. But the Molinist simply says that God decreed and chose a world, right? That's all the decree means for the Molinist. God chose a world in which he knew how agents would freely choose in a libertarian sense if he were to create that world. So although God is certain of what will happen, it does not happen necessarily. It just will happen. And William Lane Craig has done the heavy lifting explaining all of this in his book, The Only Wise God. And he discusses modal logic and how to not commit errors in modal logic and things like that. But okay, with that said, let's discuss the problem, the big problem here. With merely and subjectively seeing oneself as a source, right? When you are not ontologically and objectively the actual source, right? But you just see yourself incorrectly as a source. What good does that get you? J.P. Moreland and I discussed this in our paper. Sorry to keep saying that. But accordingly, the person on this model,
it's fine.
on Colton's model has a false belief about the efficacy of his or her deliberating based upon a false belief about the nature of deliberation itself. So it's a false belief riding on top of another false belief. So there's just problems all over the place here. So if a passive cog or a caused causer incorrectly subjectively sees himself as a first mover, what we mean by source, good job with sharing that definition.
Yeah.
All right, so let me say that again. If a caused causer or a passive cog incorrectly subjectively sees himself as a first mover, it doesn't change the objective fact that the caused causer is not a first mover. Now, I brought up Frankfurt cases. They typically have characters in these scenarios who seem to be first movers and not caused causers, at least not all the time. They're at least active and libertarian first thinkers. That is to say, the totality of their thoughts and beliefs are not determined or necessitated by the mad scientist in those thought experiments. No, they're free to think in the libertarian sense, and based upon how they freely think, the mad scientist steps in to make sure they cannot always freely act based upon how they freely think. And moreover, the mad scientists also don't seem to be determined by something or someone else in these thought experiments. So there's libertarian freedom dripping all over the place. But bottom line, it's important to remember that J.P. Moreland and I do not offer the free acting argument or the free believing argument. We advance the free thinking argument. And so we're really concerned with one's mental life. And most of these Frankfurt thought experiments involve a counterfactual intervener monitoring how one freely thinks in a libertarian sense, it seems, and then jumping in if they're not going to freely think the way they want them to freely think. So
yes, and that's exactly what I was, you know, I was talking to Josh, I was talking to you, Tim, you know, off air, and that was the thing that really stood out to me about Frankfurt cases, is that it assumes that the Jones, let's just take Jones for example, I know the one of the more famous ones is about him going to the polls, and so say he has an electorate, and I know you talked about this with JP Moreland on your video that you did on Freethinking Ministries on your YouTube channel. And basically, if Jones goes to the voting polls and say he's going to vote Democrat, right? But if he has a sudden change of thought, like the Republicans have did so much for the armed forces, and therefore his family's in the armed forces, therefore that makes him want to vote Republican, for example, if that thought were to happen to come up, then the electrode would fire, right, and make him or cause him to vote Democrat instead. That assumes libertarian free will, that he's going to vote for the Democrat side. And if he doesn't, then that electrode will fire. The difference in the deterministic worldview, and then I'll give this over to Dale and Josh, but the difference, it seems like to me, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems like the electrode is always firing in the deterministic worldview. Yeah. Everything that's been pre-programmed in that electrode or in that computer chip, and this is why libertarian and indeterminists use the puppet analogy. They use the pre-programming analogy, right? It's because all of these things are already pre-programmed in and necessitates what Jones will do. It's pre-programmed that Jones will wake up in the morning and go to the voting polls. It's pre-programmed what he's going to or who he's going to vote for. Therefore, it doesn't have to. Well, if he does this, like, surprisingly, right? If he does this, then oh no, we got to override it and make him do that. No. This is already pre-programmed, so there is no override at all. It's already playing out exactly as the computer chip has pre-programmed in it. I digress.
So we talk about, so if there's any instances of this libertarian free thinking, that's what's called flickers of freedom. Right. So we've got flickers of libertarian freedom here going. And if that's the case, even if there's no ability to actually move your body otherwise, right? If that's the case, exhaustive divine determinism is still false. Ed is false. If I've even got the freedom to think, that's not causally determined by the mad scientist or anybody else, right?
It just takes a flicker.
Yeah, it just takes a flicker to destroy Ed.
Yeah.
Dale,
what are your thoughts on that?
I'm totally on board. I agree with what you guys are saying here on this front. I was trying to think up a way to like incorporate this question, because I'm interested in Tim's take on causal deviances and how that might relate to their model, the, you know, moderate reasons responsiveness. And I was also wanting you to apply it to the free thinking thing. I know causal deviances are usually in relation to free actions. Like I can't even think of an example where you would have a thinking based causal deviance, but what's your take on causal deviances and how those relate to, you know, Colton's model here?
I guess I need an example of one. I think about it.
Sure. So causal deviances are basically, it's an objection to compatibilism, because they'll say, look, you have all the needed causal chains, all those, you know, black and green dominoes that Colton says are necessary to have freedom, right? So you have moderate reasons responsiveness and whatever, right? Mm-hmm. All those are present, but yet you didn't make a free will choice. And an example here is, let's say you're a spy in a restaurant and you've been given a task to give this signal by knocking over your glass or something like that. And you everything's present. You're fully intentionally intending to spill your glass. You have all the internal states necessary, and you're about to knock over your glass. But before you can do that on purpose, you accidentally knock it over. Mm-hmm. That's obviously not free. The conditions are present, according to compatibilists. So that shows that there's something missing. And what is that? It's the blue domino. It's that agent. So,
yeah. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm simply concerned primarily about free thinking and showing that something or someone else can't be determining and necessitating and controlling every twist and turn of all of my thoughts, that I have to be the driver. And I believe that God has created us to be drivers of this deliberative, of these, you know, these processes of deliberation that, that we experience. We're drivers. We're not passive passengers tied up in the back seat along for the ride. And so that's primarily what I'm focused on, showing and showing why that's important, showing why we can't have important kinds of, rationality, and some important kinds of knowledge with that. If we don't have that, if determinism's true, and ultimately, as we'll probably discuss here pretty soon, not only do we need to be those drivers of reason, not only do we have to be the ones steering, you know, behind the steering wheel, but if we're not, then that's going to do some really bad things to our theology, and to God and to Scripture and everything else. So I know it probably doesn't really answer your question, but just kind of really showing what my work is primarily focused on.
Yeah, I was just curious if there could be, because I couldn't think of any way to apply like causal deviances to like the issue of thoughts. But cool. You haven't heard it either. So, all right, cool.
All right. So we are going to transition into the next segment. So basically, I read, so whenever we had Colton and Tyler on, Colton gave me a link to his paper, his 500-page paper that he has written against, so refuting, I say that in air quotes, mere Molinism. And so there's a couple questions that I want to ask you, Dr. Stratton, about this paper. And then since we're at the two-hour mark, let's go ahead. Colton had wrote something on Facebook, and so let's go ahead and transition to that, and then maybe we can pick up the questions that we had for you in the Chris Date episode in a part three. I got to pick up my baby girl here in just a few minutes, but I do want to go to these questions because I think they're important. So the question, we'll just go to the first one, and then we're going to kind of maybe even speed through these. But Josh and Dell, if you guys have any feedback or anything like that, please, I don't want to feel like you guys are rushed or anything like that. Jump in if you want to. But if not, if I don't hear from you, then we'll go ahead and go on to the next question. But the first one we have is Colton has argued in his paper, so a brief philosophical and dialectical inquiry on mere Molinism. I will link this in the description for anyone that wants to go read it. You can find it on academia.com. But he argues this, that alternative possibilities are necessary at all times, not merely sufficient to hold consistently to indeterminism. So Dr. Stratton, do you ultimately agree with his assessment and reasons he provides in his paper? If not, why are alternative possibilities only sufficient?
So no, I don't agree with Colton. Now, some people think that this is the case, and Colton is certainly entitled to his subjective opinion here. Mm-hmm. But as Moreland and I noted in our paper, the view that libertarian freedom necessarily requires alternative possibilities is losing popularity among some prominent philosophers today. I mean, we discuss Eleanor Stump as an example. She has described this in her essay, Moral Responsibility Without Alternative Possibilities. William Lane Craig is a philosopher some people might have heard of. right. He is one of the leading philosophers in the world. Actually, William Lane Craig and J.P. Moreland are both considered to be two of the top 50 most influential philosophers in the world today. And we're not just talking Christian philosophers. We're talking about top 50 philosophers in the world today.
You're number one, right, Tim?
No. Never.
Tim's number one.
No, 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 no. But Dr. Craig is clear that the libertarian does not need to affirm alternative possibilities. He says, okay. Quote, "I am explicitly a libertarian about freedom of the will, and so there should be no doubt about that. I just deny the so-called principle of alternative possibilities, that the ability to do otherwise in a given situation is a necessary condition of libertarian freedom," end quote. Right, he wrote that in an article called "I, a Compatibilist?" question mark. So although JP and I do argue that humans occasionally possess alternative possibilities, what we refer to as strong libertarian freedom, arguing for the weaker version of libertarian freedom is sufficient. As we argue in our essay, the free-thinking argument can be defended with or without the assumption of alternative possibilities. So look, I do think we have alternative possibilities. I argue that we do. But for the sake of argument, I can also say, well, let's suppose all those arguments fail. I can still make my point without it. So here's an argument based upon the one that we advanced in our paper, and I'm going to expand it. All right, so it's an edited and expanded version, I think. So it goes like this. Premise one, if God determines all things about humanity, then God determines all Christians to have some false theological intuitions and to hold some false theological beliefs. Premise two, if God determines all Christians to have some false theological intuitions and to hold some false theological beliefs, then God is an untrustworthy source of theological beliefs. Or you could say God is a deity of deception. Three, if God is an untrustworthy source of theological beliefs, then there is reason to doubt God's inspired word. Four, there is never reason to doubt God's inspired word. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
All right. Five, deductive conclusion. Therefore, God is not an untrustworthy source of theological beliefs. Or you could say God is not a deity of deception. Six, therefore, God does not determine all Christians to have some false theological intuitions and to hold some false theological beliefs. Seven, therefore, God does not determine all things about humanity, and thus Ed is false. So this spinoff from the free thinking argument, it's part of the family of free thinking arguments, simply shows that the problem is with determinism simpliciter, right? It does not assume alternative possibilities. It says nothing of it. In fact, the first premise assumes exhaustive divine determinism. So I digress. Look, Mr. Carlson might disagree, but along with Dr. William Lane Craig, Dr. Eleanor Stump, Dr. David Hunt, Dr. J.P. Moreland, and many others, I contend that as long as one is not determined by something or someone else when they are rationally deliberating, then one is a free thinker in a libertarian sense. Gotcha. If that means that they possess alternative possibilities, if that's what follows, then great, because I think we have those. I just don't need them to show the problems with determinism. So I've got a lot more I could say on this. In fact, in a footnote that was kind of inspired based upon the advice of Dr. Matt Flummer, or Dr. Matthew Flummer of the Free Will Show fame, I just point people to our paper to check out what I write about weak libertarian freedom is a necessary condition for libertarian freedom. I mean, it's in the name. and then there's strong libertarian freedom, which is a sufficient condition. Anyway, check out our paper. We get into that in more depth and detail.
Send me a link to that and I'll link it in the description for people to check out.
And if people want to see it and find it easily, you can go to freethinkingministries.com or to freethinkinc.org. That's freethinkinc.org. And just go to my articles under the Free Thinking Theist and look for my paper with JP. It's got a picture of JP and I. Click on that, scroll to the bottom, click on the click here, and it'll take you right to the journal. Yeah.
Right on. All right. So the second question I have, and again, I could respond to that, but we are kind of running short. Yeah. But so I'll go ahead and jump to the next question. Dale or Josh, if you guys don't have anything, I'll jump to the second question.
Lightning round.
Lightning round, yeah.
I was just going to say, if Tim was able to share his screen with that seven premise argument, just so you could see it. Are you able to do that or no?
Let me just send it to you and you can put it in the notes or whatever.
Okay. I'll put
it. I don't have it all.
It'll also be available in the transcript if anybody wants to click on the description. Oh, yeah. YouTube leaves transcripts now. You can leave the timestamp and they can go through that step by step.
That'll work. And we're about at the 2-hour mark. So that'll work. All right. So second question. On page 25 of Colton's paper, he writes the following, quote, "We see that Stratton's desired flavor of the freedom articulated in mere Molinism is leeway, the ability to do otherwise. But this does not answer the more intriguing question of whether or not the leeway is indeed sufficient for libertarianism, or more broadly, for moral or rational responsibility. As far as I can tell, Stratton does not once answer the question on the sufficiency of libertarian freedom. He simply takes it for granted that his specific brand of leeway ought to be taken as sufficient for freedom," end quote. Colton then goes on to briefly explain the Luck objection and then writes, quote, "My only aim in this small section was to simply point out that Stratton has not touched the object in his rejoinder to Bingon. In his book, or podcast episodes to date. This is quite devastating. A scholar who supposedly dabbles in the philosophy of freedom should honestly consider the primary objections to his view, and the lack of objection is notoriously one of them. But where is Stratton's response to this major objection? Where's his defense? It is nowhere to be found," end quote. So, Dr. Stratton, I wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to this objection made by Colton right here and now. What would you like to say to Colton in return? I have to say it like that, guys. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to joke or anything like that, but I think this is a good conversation. I want to have fun with it. And so no disrespect to Colton or anything like that, but I like to have fun.
Yeah. You were a little animated there, but
just a little bit.
I get animated at times too. So look, Colton has described himself as my biggest fan.
Yeah.
But for someone who claims to be my biggest fan, he should probably have done a simple word search on my website. If he would have just gone to my website and typed in the word luck in the search window, he would have seen an article I published in 2021 called Molinism, Hell, and the Problem of Luck. Moreover, in my co-authored journal article published with J.P. Moreland, I wrote the following lengthy footnote. So let me get this here. I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
All right. Quote, "Regarding randomness or luck, we believe that a Christian view of God and man, especially with Molinism in mind, does the best job of diminishing any luck problems. If all things about an agent are causally determined by something or someone else, which seems to follow in both naturalism and ed, then one is lucky if the external deterministic force beyond one's control causally determines one to affirm a true belief. If one's belief truly is random and the agent happens to affirm a true belief, he's also lucky. However, if one is a rational agent created in the image and likeness of God, everything changes. If a human possesses the God-given powers of reflective self-control," and see Christopher Evan Franklin in his book, A Minimal Libertarianism, Free Will and the Promise of Reduction from 2018. "Then if one is careful to take thoughts captive and does his due diligence, as opposed to being lucky, then he can rationally infer and rationally affirm better and true beliefs in the actual world. This is perfectly compatible with Molinism. According to Ed, however, God does not choose the elect based upon anything about the individual, lest any man should boast," Ephesians 2:9. "So those who are passed by, the damned, and those who are elect, seem to be based upon luck or chance. Indeed, the elect seem to have won a cosmic and infinite lottery of sorts. Moreover, those who have been created for the sole purpose of eternal damnation are literally the unluckiest folks in all creation. Ultimately, it seems we can find luck problems for any view. Some luck problems are worse than others. End quote. Then, in the conclusion of our paper, JP and I point out the following. Let me read this one too. Quote, ultimately, a person's metaphysical and theological beliefs are either, one, determined by something non-rational and thus untrustworthy, two, determined by a deity of deception and thus untrustworthy, three, random, or you could say lucky, and thus untrustworthy, or four, caused by an intelligently designed free-thinking agent created in the likeness of a maximally great being, God, with cognitive faculties functioning properly, subject to no dysfunction, in an appropriate environment, which can be aimed at truth if the agent is careful and handles his or her powers responsibly. The first three options leave us with skepticism and reason to doubt our metaphysical and theological thoughts and beliefs. Option four is the best explanation and our best hope. However, the fourth option entails that one is free in a libertarian sense, not determined by something unreliable or someone who is untrustworthy. End quote. And I'll just add that epistemologist Tyler Dalton McNabb actually pointed me in that direction a few years ago. I started advancing this idea that proper function would entail libertarian freedom, at least in some important circumstances. And McNabb informed me at the time, this was back in 2017, that he said that he was inclined to agree with me and encourage me to consider offering a conditional analysis. And I think it works great. I'm not going to say that this is his view, but he really kind of helped me form this. And I've been continuing to develop this idea ever since. So I'm grateful for his coaching in that area.
Nice. I love it. I absolutely love it. Dale, Josh, anything you want to add, or we'll jump into the third question?
No, you're good. I'm good.
Okay.
Speed round.
All right. Speed round. All right. So on page 30 of his paper, Colton writes the following, and I'll try not to be as animated this time. Now, quote, now, what if we go along with what Stratton is claiming for argument's sake, that determinism simpliciter could be seen as either exhaustive or non-exhaustive? What does this mean if determinism is simply non-exhaustive? Does this mean we could still keep residual amounts of freedom or responsibility while being determined in an action such as salvation, i.e. matters above versus matters below? I presume that it means that if I am determined unto salvation to believe in Christ, meaning my act of faith in Christ is determined, I still possess freedom necessary for responsibility of some kind in the midst of that determined action or deliberation. If that is the case, and if we are free or responsible in that act of believing or the act of willing to believe, even though we've been determined, hasn't the debate been surrendered? So, Tim, has the debate been surrendered in this instance? If so, are we all compatibilists now?
No. So I guess I'd like a little more context to provide a sufficient response right now.
Sure.
But let me note that I use the word exhaustive when discussing determinism for multiple reasons. So number one, a person might be referring to a set of things that are strictly part of the universe when discussing determinism. So a theist might be a determinist regarding all things that are strictly part of the universe, but also hold that things that transcend the universe or could exist apart from the universe are not determined. And since I believe that human souls would continue to exist even if the entire universe were annihilated, I could say I was a determinist in one sense, but not another. I was a determinist in all things that are strictly part of the universe. I'm quite open to that being the case. But in things that transcend the universe or could survive the annihilation of the universe, I don't think those things are determined. So now it's also vital to note that the second point I'd like to make is that it's that Colton doesn't speak for all Calvinists. You know, some have said that TULIP is true and that salvation matters are completely determined. Be that as it may, they realize the rationality problems that come along for the ride if determinism is true. And thus, these Calvinists will affirm that all things regarding soteriology are determined, but not all things about humanity in general are determined. In fact, this is why I constantly bypass the whole salvation soteriological conversation and go straight to the Corinthians that Paul was addressing, who were in the church, and thus it stands to reason they were already saved, and thus they have the ability and power to sin or not to sin in a specific circumstance at a specific moment. They can do otherwise. And that means they're not causally determined by God. So you could say that all things about salvation are determined, but now Christians have a, I mean, if we don't say that, that means that, you know, God causes every Christian to do every sin that every Christian does. And we can look around and find some horrible sins committed by those who claim to be Christians. And again, when I was just at the EPS ETS conference in Denver a couple weeks ago now, several Calvinists came up to me. I was in the lobby and like the first night there, and several Calvinists from different institutions came up and wanted to talk to me. And so for three nights in a row, I'd go down to the lobby to talk to these guys. And these are academics, and every one of them affirmed this view. They would say that TULIP is true and TULIP is deterministic, but that we have, as Christians, libertarian freedom to sin or not to sin. And they would also tell, this is where it got funny, they would also say that God knew how the Christian would freely choose prior to his decree, because they they were right. They said God is necessarily omniscient. And I said, well that's middle knowledge. I would say, well, that's middle knowledge. And they're, no, it's not. I said, no, if God knows how a Christian would freely choose logically prior to the creative decree, then that's middle knowledge. And they're like, no, it's not. And I'm like, oh, man, okay, it is. They just don't like the label. It's just crazy to me.
It is. As a Calvinist, it is.
Yeah. It's, and I think it's largely because the word Molinism comes from Molina, who was a Spanish Jesuit Catholic counter-reformer, right? But that's the genetic fallacy. You can't reject, you can't affirm exactly the concept that Molina was discussing, but then reject it based on the label just because you don't like who came up with the term. Anyway, now Colton mentioned the freedom of some kind of responsibility. And I've described this as epistemic responsibility here. And I think this is getting into what he calls his mere Molinism dilemma. Colton, I think, was really contradicting himself on that topic when he claimed it's a vital thread throughout his 500 and some pages interacting with my work. And I'd like to discuss that a bit. Yeah, let me give my third and most important reason for using the word exhaustive. When talking about determinism, the third reason would be that ultimately I use the word exhaustive because, like clockwork, whenever I talk to a determinist, whether it be a popularizer on Facebook or to an academic who actually has contributed to the literature, right? They wind up stealing. Like we've said earlier, they wind up stealing from the God-given gift of libertarian freedom to argue against the God-given gift of libertarian freedom. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll say this. I do not think I've ever interacted with a Calvinist who would go out of their way to use clear language besides when Chris Date said we can't use permission language. So again, this is why JP and I said this in our paper. We said, though unintentional, by utilizing statements in the active voice, determinists benefit from a rhetorical mirage that keeps hidden what is actually being asserted. Passivity, right? Passivity is what's actually being asserted here, but they steal from our language so that those who don't see the bigger picture might find it more, might find it not as bad, I guess. Now, since, like I said earlier, since this rhetorical mirage has been pointed out, If they continue to commit this error, it won't be unintentional, but rather an intentional act of deception. So if you're a determinist out there, let's keep the determinists, or if you're an indeterminist out there, if you're a libertarian freedom fighter, let's keep the determinists' feet to the fire here and not let them use our language. Make them express what is actually going on here. Now, with that said, for the sake of time, I wanted to talk about the Mir Molinism dilemma that he writes about, but I'm just going to point people to my website, and maybe you guys can put it in the description.
Yeah,
of course. Freethinkingministries.com. I have a paper called or an article called "A Response to the So-Called Mir Molinism Dilemma." Can you guys see it?
Yep,
there. Right. So it's got the bull on it. Yeah, it does look like the Chicago Bulls. So I encourage people to go there and read that, because I really interact with and expose what's wrong with Colton's one of his key threads that goes through his big paper. But yeah, with that said, let's just go to the next question you have for me.
Okay, so with that being said, actually, Tim, can you send me a link to that? That would be helpful. I think we're done with the Colton's responses or Colton's the questions I had about Colton's paper. I do want to get your view on the response that he put on Facebook, though. Just
really quickly before we do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You had mentioned to me that you wanted to talk about Genesis 50:20.
Okay, all right. I was freely debating whether to do that or not. But yeah, let's go ahead. Let's go to Genesis 50:20 real quick, and then we'll get into Colton's, and then we'll wrap up. So Genesis 50:20 comes up a lot in these discussions, and I'm curious, Tim, how Molinists interpret this passage. So let me just read the passage from the NASB, and then I'll get your thoughts on it. "As for you," so Joseph's brothers here, "you meant evil against me," this is Joseph talking, "but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive." So Dr. Stratton, how do Molinists interpret this passage, since this is a text that Calvinists love to bring up? I've heard Dr. James White bring this up multiple times. I think I've heard Chris Date bring it up a few times in discussing this concept with other Molinists, with other non-Calvinists. How do you interpret this passage, sir?
Yeah, I was hoping to get to this during my debate or discussion with Chris that we had a few weeks ago on your show, but it never came up. But Molinism by far provides the best understanding of this passage, I contend. So let's quickly examine the passage. "As for you, Joseph's brothers, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive." Okay, now I prefer the ESV translation. That's usually the translation of the Bible that I use most of the time. But let's read this passage now from another translation, the EDD translation.
The Exhaustive Divine Determinism?
Yeah, that one. "As for you, Joseph's brothers, God determined you and necessitated you to intend evil against me. But God also determined that the evil he determined you to do would go on in turn to also determine the present result, which an omnipotent God could have determined without determining you guys to intend evil against me in the first place." Okay, look, that just seems absurd, right? Well, now let's consider this passage with Molinism in mind. This is from the MIV, the Molinist International Version. "As for you, Joseph's brothers, you freely chose to commit evil against me, but God knew and created a world in which he knew that your free and evil choices would be used for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive." Now, I don't know about you, but I think that makes much more sense, avoids absurdities, and just is pretty cool, just plain awesome. Now, I like to think about it like this. Let me read one more translation. It's from the MCU translation. MCU, the Marvel Comics Universe translation, goes like this. As for you, Thanos, you freely planned evil against the world, but Doctor Strange created a world in which he knew how your non-determined, free, and evil plans would lead to the present and good result, the survival of many people. So I just think that makes sense when you think about that. I mean, that the MCU version gives us a nice analogy to really kind of see, wow, this does make sense. And so much sense that you could actually make one of the best movies of all time about it. So anyway, I just wanted to talk
real quick. Can we copyright those three versions right now?
Yeah. No, and I actually, I have fun with that. And I post stuff like this on Facebook and Twitter quite often. Like, I'll take passages of scripture. And like I said, let's not let folks steal from libertarian language. Let's don't let the determinist steal from the libertarian to argue against the libertarian. Yeah. So then I will post, I'll say, here's the EDD version of certain passages of scripture. And when you're clear about what is actually going on in different circumstances, and so I say, here's the EDD version. And I try to be so clear about what it means to be determined by God and these different, I mean, just absurdity drips all over the place. And people when you're clear about what you really mean by determinism, and then you read scripture through that lens, I think that's one of the best ways to get people to reject determinism.
Yeah, no, and I think you're absolutely right. So I support you 100%, Tim, to keep using EDD, because it wasn't until I actually understood what you meant by that I realized that determinism was just ridiculous. I mean, honestly, because I had it, you can even ask Josh, I had it for the longest time that compatibilism was simply that God determines some things and we determine some things. Well, that's Molinism, right? And so, and Chris, by all means, thank God for Chris, because he clarified that for me, that no, that is not what that means at all. So I think unless I'm just dumb, right? I think other Calvinists or people that hold to unknowingly determinism, some of them don't understand that. And so by all means, bro, keep using Ed, because I think it really breaks down what the compatibilist and what the determinist is actually saying. So,
yeah, it's like, they're like, well, I've got guidance control. I'm like, wait a second. You affirm exhaustive divine determinism.
Yes.
And they're like, you don't have to use the word exhaustive. That's redundant, but I've got guidance control. Like, wait a second. If you say it's redundant, that means you affirm that it is exhaustive.
Right.
And if it's exhaustive, then that, that shines a big bright spotlight. Every time I say exhaustive, that means, ooh, even what you're referring to is your guidance control. Well, Paul Helm says that no human has control of his thoughts, that God controls every twist and turn of all of your thoughts. Well, say goodbye to guidance control.
Yep.
Paul Helm actually says something to the effect of God controls every twist and turn of all of every human thought. Mm-hmm. And then he says he has not given that control to any human. I quote him in the paper with JP. And I'm like, okay, well, look, according to Paul Helm, what you call your guidance control is determined by a deity of deception.
Yes.
What's that? You're trying to steal from my view to argue against my view. And I'm just not going to let you do that.
Right. I agree 100%. So let's, as we're winding down, let us, because Colton had made one response. So I had advertised the discussion that we're having right now that we're going to release tomorrow. He said this in response. So I had wrote, we will not be doing a live episode of Faith Unaltered tonight. However, we will be releasing the episode we record tonight with Dr. Tim Stratton first thing in the morning. So if y'all are watching it, we've released it. Congratulations. All right. Dr. Stratton returns to Faith Unaltered to answer the audience questions from his discussion with Chris Date, as well as tackle some of the questions we had for him, but never got to in that episode. Then, as an early Christmas present, we dive into a few segments from the interview we did with Colton Carlson and Tyler Vella on determinism, compatibilism, and Calvinism, which we just did a few moments ago. And so Colton had responded to that post by me, and he said this, and Tim, I want to get your thoughts on this, and then we'll close. His responses, so Dr. Stratton's responses, will be synonymous to the presuppositionalist response to atheist, quote, "Well, you see, by arguing against libertarian freedom, you're tacitly affirming it." Shaking my head. Again, my volume two reply, which Stratton refuses to honestly engage, should suffice to refute whatever it is he says tomorrow.
I saw that little flare, by the way, in the way you read that. So
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be animated whenever I read it. I'm just reading it as I think how he would say. Anyway,
there you go.
Good, Dr. Stratton. What's your response to Colton?
Well, I mean, Dan Chapa and I have discussed much of the things that he's written on a long YouTube video.
That was with Tartan Fan, correct? Or
no, that was a different one that we did on the Freethinking Ministries YouTube channel.
Okay.
I've written a couple blog articles. Right here in this video, we've interacted with his work. I did print it off and started reading it, and took my red pen out and was grading it, so to speak. And there's just red marks all over the place. And it finally just occurred to me, well, yeah, he's well read, but just made so many mistakes time and time again. And I think we've exposed a lot of these here. He's not a scholar. He hasn't contributed to the literature. And so I just finally stopped, and I'm like, okay, if somebody wants to ask me questions based upon what he wrote, I will gladly answer those questions. But I'm more interested, I've contributed to the literature. I've written a book. I've written multiple journal articles. I've got more coming out. I've got two other books coming out. And I'm more concerned about actually dealing with others who are contributing to the literature that have letters behind their name. And so that doesn't take away anything from Colton. He's a really smart guy, but he's a high school math teacher that doesn't have degrees in these fields. I was reading I printed it off and started reading it and got quite a bit of the way through it, jumped around a little bit, just found so many problems. And, so anyway, that's why, he's saying I haven't honestly engaged. I've interacted with quite a bit of it now and expose some of the problems. So anyway, I guess, you asked me what else I would have to say in response. I would say, well, he's kind of right about that, but it's true, but far too simplistic. So let me just say it like this. When he compares me to the presuppositionalist interacting with the atheist here.
Yeah.
I actually think the presuppositionalist, the tag argument, is on to something. So to just dismiss it and shake your head at it is, I don't think, fair to Colton's presuppositionalist friends like Eli Ayala. But JP and I don't merely assert this kind of thing. We specifically and explicitly explain exactly why this is the case in an extremely long academic journal article. And with that said, I do want to recommend a recent YouTube video. In fact, I just released it yesterday that shows that presuppositional apologists cannot also be exhaustive divine determinists for the same reasons that Colton cannot rationally affirm his theological views, even though Colton doesn't claim to be a presupper. So perhaps you can share the link of that video in the description of this video.
Absolutely.
It's got me on it going like this and with Ed and one
Maven.
Yeah, wearing the Maven shirt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this. Colton, even though he doesn't personally claim to be a presupper, is a presupper, it seems to me. He presupposes and assumes that a deity of deception does not deceive him when it comes to these matters. So what JP and I have shown is that if Ed is true, all of Colton's intuitions, thoughts, judgments, evaluations, deliberations, and ultimately all of his theological and metaphysical beliefs are determined and necessitated by a deity of deception. And if you don't like that term or label, we can just say an untrustworthy supernatural cause, right? Thus, if Colton continues to clutch on to Ed every time he appeals to his, and again, note the scare quotes, his intuitions, which are determined by a deity of deception, thoughts determined by a deity of deception, judgments determined by a deity of deception, deliberations determined by a deity of deception, or any belief determined by a deity of deception, every time he does this, he begs the question by presupposing and assuming that an untrustworthy deity of deception is determining Colton to affirm true beliefs, this time on these matters. He blithely ignores the undercutting defeaters which have been raised against his view. We've shown them. And Colton simply presupposes in the face of these defeaters. So, yeah, he's kind of right that I'm going to respond in a similar manner. Not synonymously, not perfect. It's not an exact kind of thing. In fact, it's been a few years now, but Saiten Brueggenkate, who's one of the leading presuppositional apologists out there, several years ago, wrote an article trying to debunk the free thinking argument, because so many people were saying, well, the free thinking argument is an awesome presuppositional argument, but what I presuppose in it is the fourth premise that humanity can rationally infer and rationally affirm important kinds of, you know, knowledge claims or whatever. And to Saiten's Brueggenkate, I can't say his name, to Brueggenkate's credit, he said, no, the free thinking argument is not a presuppositional argument. And then he tried to argue against it. Why shouldn't I argue that way? And so I responded to him. If anybody wants to read that on the Free Thinking Ministries website. And I like to say, look, the free thinking argument logically concludes what the presupper presupposes. Mm-hmm. I think the free thinking argument kind of helps the presuppositional apologist out a little bit here, but it can't be married to Ed is what I show in this video, the tag versus Ed video. Anyway, does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think it does. I really do. And just go ahead, Dale.
I just wanted to ask, like, Tim, I know we're closing out and stuff. Is it okay if I jump in and just ask one quick question? So it sounds like you saw the video with Colton and Tyler kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So at one point I kind of asked them about the issue of properly basic beliefs as a reason. I know you mentioned J.P. Moreland's use of the phenomenological texture and proper how that relates to basicality. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of, you know, you heard Tyler Vela's response to that was, well, it's all BS. No one has a properly basic belief. And he gave a long list of conjunctions as to what they would have to believe. And, I know my response to that. But what's your response there?
I don't remember that. I might not have watched the whole thing. So you're telling me that Tyler said that there's no such thing as a properly basic belief?
Not when it comes to libertarian free will, because he was, you would have to believe you have.
Okay. I highly disagree with them. In fact, I've asked this question on multiple college campuses. You know, I'll take the whiteboard and I put this on Facebook and, you know, I get college students to vote, you know, students that have never been trained in a philosophy class who haven't thought about these things. I'll tell you what everybody knows is that one should not be blamed for a belief that was determined by the blamer. Right? Think about that. if one was deterministically prevented from thinking other than X, then if come to find out that the judge who is blaming him for not thinking X deterministically prevented him to think in the manner in which he thought, everybody will see that's not right. If I'm going to be blamed and judged by the one who is determining me to think incorrectly, something's wrong. Everybody knows that, you know? I guess that's what I'd say to that. I have a lot more to say on it, but that's where I'd start.
So correct me if I'm wrong real quick, and then we'll close down. So with that, so take that example, what you just said, back to a Frankfurt case, right? Mm-hmm. So take Jones, for example. The judge is the one that actually puts the electrode into Jones's mind.
Mm-hmm.
He determines that Jones will punch dude in the face, Alex. Let's just say Alex, right? No, mm-hmm. not Alex Jones, but we know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Jones punches Alex in the face. Josh cracking up. And then finds that Jones is now standing trial. He pleads guilty, you know, whatever. And then come to find out later on down the road that the judge actually implanted the electrode into Jones's head, activated it to punch Alex in the face, and then the judge holds Jones responsible for that action. Is that the same thing that we're kind of talking about here, or am I a little bit off?
Just hearing it one time sounds, I think you're on the right track there. And I also say that, you know, this going back to what Dale said about the, you know, how JP talks about this phenomenological texture. Mm-hmm. It seems to us that we're steering the ship, or that we're behind the steering wheel of deliberating. It's like we can choose to step on the gas, to put on the brakes, to turn right or left when we're thinking things through. That's what it seems like to us. It does not seem like we're tied up, gagged in the back seat, just being aware of things. And that's right. what you get with us, even with the soul on this deterministic view. Tyler, you and I were talking earlier about one of the articles I wrote several years ago called The Vanishing Eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I talk about this in my book too. If exhaustive divine determinism is true, all you get is awarenesses, right? You're aware of things passing through you that feel like you're in control of it, right? But you're not. You're aware of, you know, that's why I say if something or someone else determines exactly what you're aware of, how you think of and about, you know, what you think of and about and how you think of and about things, right? You're still conscious, but you're not aware of what you're not in control of what you're conscious of,
right? What you're aware of, right?
And what you're aware of, yeah. So, you know, that's why I say in my book on this Ed view, you're nothing but a bag of beliefs, none of which is up to the bag, right? So again, I like to use the analogy, the difference between the active driver steering behind the steering wheel and somebody that's tied up, gagged, and sitting in the back seat of the car. All you've got is awarenesses, right? But you've got no control over anything. And that phenomenological texture, most people are going to tell you, now I feel like when I've got a problem to solve, or, you know, when I'm deliberating through something, when I'm judging or evaluating a proposition, I'm the one that's doing it and I'm not being determined by something or someone else. I've offered that to I've offered that on multiple college campuses. You know, I go out with Maven and we, go on many college campuses around the country, and, also do just, other ministry. I once a week, I go to the University of Nebraska here in Kearney and, do apologetics work, ultimately trying to share the gospel. And this is a question that I ask there. I also go to the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, go Big Red. you know, I've asked that question there 2 years in a row now. And yeah, when people say that, no, people don't have that intuition, I'm like, yeah, we do. And in fact, and Braxton Hunter, my boss at Trinity College of the Bible Theological Seminary, you know, when he speaks at churches, he'll say, yeah, I'll just ask the, you know, the church lady, the, you know, the average church lady, hey, You know, this 1 Corinthians 10:13. Does this mean you as a Christian, when you're tempted in a specific circumstance, you can sin or do otherwise and not sin? And they're like, of course you can. You know, that is, you will find the vast majority of church attenders affirming that much. So,
amen. Amen.
I had the same intuition in grade 12. I remember I was in law class or something like that, and I had that same intuition. I couldn't understand, you know, the compatibilist view or something like that. I didn't even know the terminology, but yeah. I could just tell. Yeah.
Now, and I'll just add that those who.
Oops. I broke him. Oh no.
You way to go, Dale. I'm
gonna go back on mute because
man,
with all these stupid questions bugging me.
Yet. No, they're not stupid. They're so smart that you broke him. Way to go. I'm going to blame you for being there. He's back. All right, go ahead.
Like all the screen, every one of you went blank. I didn't know if I was. No, I'll just say I had to be taught determinism. I had to be taught that my intuitions were false. And I was convinced that it was biblical then.
Yeah.
And so, man, I was cage stage for years. Years and years, people go to my website, read the article called Molinism Saves Marriages, because I would fight with my wife over this. She was raised Arminian. I was a Calvinist when we got married. And then I became much stronger in my Calvinism after we got married. And man, we were fighting. The only night I ever slept on the couch was over Calvinism.
What?
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
James White once said, Tim Stratton wasn't really a Calvinist. Like, tell that to my wife. I was willing to sleep on the couch and if not even get divorced. You know, I was like, I was so hardcore that I was like, I doubted my wife's salvation at the time. I'm like, why would God determine her to think incorrectly on this important matter? Maybe she's not saved. Whoa. Because why would God determine a true born again, regenerated person to not be a Calvinist?
I've had that thought too, bro.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you were converted out of your couchinism, because that was probably a mistake.
The couchinism?
The couchinism.
Josh, that's the best thing I've heard all day.
Right on. Well,
so,
Go ahead.
She's texting me. How much longer? She wants to, I'm supposed to take her out on a late night date. So
I better go pick up my kiddo too. So, all right, y'all. Well, Dr. Tim Stratton, thank you so much for joining us on this, edition of the discussion that you had with Chris Date. We appreciate you so much coming back on to answer the audience questions, to answer my questions about what, Colton had said in the video that he did with us on this podcast, as well as the paper that he wrote. And so I just give you all the props in the world for doing that. And really, dude, I meant everything I said from the bottom of my heart in my intro. You and Josh are the two main influences in my life that has led me out of theological determinism into the libertarian free will Molinism camp. And so I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for that. Dale Glover, it's always a pleasure, brother, to have you on with us to offer everything that you bring to the table, bro. It strengthens me in one way or another. Even if I don't understand it wholeheartedly, I think about it. No, listen. And I go back and I listen to what you had said, even if I have to slow it down, bro. And I end up getting it every single time. And so, Dale, if it wasn't for you, bro, I don't know where I would be right now. And so I love you. I thank you for everything that you offer and everything that you bring to the table every time you come on to Faith Unaltered. And my co-host, Joshua Davidson, brother, I love you. Can I just say that? I love you so much, and I would give you a hug right now if you were close. But guys, it has been an absolute pleasure. It's been an honor to have you back on, Dr. Stratton, and we look forward to the next time you come back on to discuss these concepts and maybe even another set of topics later on down the road.
Yeah, so, before we went live, we were having some good discussions about hell and some other topics. So
yes.
I think you guys were talking about beauty. I've got a lot to say about that, about objective beauty. Awesome. Yeah, let's do that sometime.
Let's do it. Cool. Let's do it.
If you don't need me, I'd love to be involved in that. If you don't
mind. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You better be there.
Yeah. I would love to, yeah.
Cool. Tyler, I will make it happen. So cool. That'll work.
Last thing from me.
Go ahead, bro.
You're free. Justice is real. God is good. Enjoy being a co-author in time.
Amen. Amen. I like it. And with that, I will end it with good night, God bless, and stay like Christ.